OG is Boson-Li if, well, it's a Li group, it's a Boson manifold, and the two structures are compatible in that the multiplication map is Poisson, so a morphism of Poisson manifold, where this is Poisson by definition, and this carries the standard product Poisson structure. So if G is a, say, an algebraic group, then we can do this, of course, algebraically by looking at the coordinate ring. And so then it becomes Poisson algebra. That's the bracket. The main thing, of course, is that the map corresponding to multiplication becomes co-multiplication. The co-multiplication is a morphism of Poisson algebras, where again it's just the two factors commute. And of course there is all those paraphernalia of if you have a group, then of course you have an algebra. It has a unit. It has a co-unit. There is an inverse map. So there is an antipod, and all this gadget satisfies the obvious axioms. Before I move on, let me make the following, again, a classic remark that will play an important role. I'll put it this way. So as a bracket on the space of functions is, I'll put it slightly loudly, is a deformation of its linearization. Let me explain what I mean by that. So we have a co-unit. It is typically not part of the axioms, but it is true, nevertheless, that this is a Lie algebra morphism. So the kernel, the maximal ideal at the unit, is a Lie algebra. It's filtered. And the filtration is compatible with the Lie algebra structure. So there is the graded object. It's a graded Lie algebra. And a moment's thought will convince you that the corresponding bracket is linear in a natural sense of this word. In particular, if you restrict what that gives to, in this case, and if you restrict to one component of the corresponding graded space, which, by the way, is just a G star. So that's a Lie algebra bracket. And so, of course, cotangent space is the Lie algebra, but that explains that the dual is also the Lie algebra. That's part of the Mannion triple that allows you algebraically to discuss Poisson Lie groups. All right, now my example. At least it's a pre-quantitative classical version of that example. So it is provided by pseudo-differential symbols. And I will be talking about the work of Hessen and Zakharevich. So consider the set of expressions like this. Where all the U's are formal Laurent series and lambda runs for the set of complex numbers. You can multiply to such symbols. I'm sure you've seen how this is done, and those who haven't, it's a good exercise to figure this out. There is a way of moving, an obvious way of moving even complex powers of other del to the right of any function, and it makes sense. These things can as well be inverted. So you take out delta of the lambda, and then use the geometric series formula, thinking of this as a small epsilon. And the result again will make sense. So I will call this set G sub psi DO. And so we see that this is a group. This will write if I keep on writing one more. Geometric structure. Well, it's not quite an algebraic group. It's some sort of, I believe, I love the word. Int scheme of infinite type or something like this. I will not be concerned with the structure and I will skate over it. What's undisputable though is that lambda and the Fourier coefficients, which one may want naturally to denote in this way, are coordinates. I will, from time to time, use this notation, meaning the yet undefined algebra of a coordinate ring. It's some sort of a huge topological commutative associative algebra. I will soon see a flavor of it, but let me mention, for example, that let me use the observation that these are coordinates. So if you, for example, consider this set, that defines you a submanifold consisting of pseudo-differential symbols of a fixed order.
So then you may be integral uj times power of z, uj z times power of z.
Yes. Of course. You can, in addition, require that lambda be a positive integer, and then in addition impose that all u's starting with an appropriate one are equal to zero. And if you look at the notation, you will see that what it means is just the space of all formal differential operators of order m. This is a space I will make use of. All right, so we've got functions. One way or another, the bracket. The bracket will be the famous Gelfand-Dicke bracket. So let me remind you of this famous definition, Gell van Dicke bracket of two linear functions. Let's evaluate it. On an arbitrary pseudo-differential symbol L. Here is this famous formula. Actually, by now, almost learned it. So here is what you have to do. Oh, I forgot, of course. Sorry. So you have to evaluate all of this and take, so to say, the trace, or if you like, take the residue at z equals 0 and d equals del equals 0. The way I wrote it, that's the intermediate expression is, of course, 0. You have to do something about it. So there. Plus means this is so. First of all, you either think of this lambda as equal to the degree of L, or if you like, you can think of lambda as a function which is more natural. But then, when so to say applied to L, it should take the value equal to equal to the power of the degree of the point. No, the product. So then the degree of this expression is an integer. Taking plus means throwing away all negative powers. A similar thing is done here, but with respect to another pair of expressions. And you multiply. You compute the product, and then what this means is simply take the coefficient at the inverse del inverse. That's where our vertex algebraist science started. This expression is not easy to manipulate. I think even proving, God forbid, anti-symmetry is a major undertaking. One thing that's really easy and fun to do is to, and something that will play a role, is to see that the Fourier coefficient of a sub-principal symbol that people just bar instead of that silly integral generates the Heisenberg algebra. So delta M minus m n lambda.
What is bar? What means bar? This is like a Fourier module.
Module bar means modulo dz, an element of the Durham cohomology, or take the integral. This is the Fourier coefficient. Aren't you teaching calculus? you don't. You always travel, I know. So another thing, this is that actually is easy and fun. Another thing, and that is quite fundamental, you will see that the result depends on lambda polynomially. And this really is the reason why this.
It's the same I or different I in the formula.
There's no I, it's one.
It's one. Only one.
You teach calculus, you should write it clearly.
Delta
N minus. So that's just
H, yeah, what is H?
it's not h, it's n. It's delta n minus m.
Ah, okay. See.
So much excitement. All right. Another, so this is a very particular computation, and here is a sort of a lemma and a fundamental one. Of course, they were working, Gelfand and Dicke, not with such things, but rather with actual differential operators. So the reason all of this works with an arbitrary lambda is formalized in the following lemma, namely, the ideal, how to put it, the set of functions that vanish on the ideal of DON, so on the set lambda, on the set given by those equations, is a Poisson ideal. It's an ideal, of course.
So it's a Poisson leaf, so to say.
Yes, it's so. In other words, and this is something that's very easy to see. If you bracket a function that vanishes if a function belongs to this ideal, then the bracket with anything else belongs to this ideal as well. And this is easy to see from this formula. So, if your function vanishes on all differential operators, that's what we're talking about. Then look what happens. And if L is a differential operator, then this whole expression automatically is a differential operator. This is a differential operator. This is, in principle, whatever lambda is. Lambda doesn't have to be a differential operator. But if it is, then this whole expression is a differential operator. And this function vanishes. So the bracket of this function with any function like this is zero. And that's exactly the ideal statement. So this is an explanation of how this bracket defines the standard Gelfand-Dicke bracket. Of course, the classics of the subject knew that all of this can be done for an arbitrary lambda. Perhaps they didn't have much enthusiasm for doing it in this situation. But Hessen and Zakharievich had such enthusiasm and proved the following theorem. It's an ancient story, it's 90s. G psi DO is a Poisson Lie group with respect to Gelfand-Dicke bracket. That's one statement. Another statement is probably what you would expect. The subvarieties defined by either an equation like this or the more interesting one. Are Poisson submanifolds. And finally, remember I started with this remark about linearization. So what is the Lie algebra? Rather, G star. So T star, G psi DO at it's very easy to understand what that actually algebra of this group is. More interesting for us is the question what that is. And the answer is appealing. It's the algebra of actually a central extension, the famous central, universal central extension of the algebra of usual differential operators on C star. Something that, with a bit of an effort, gives W1 plus infinity. All right, next. All of this is, of course, a bit cumbersome. Part of it is, of course, intrinsic complexity of the subject. But part of it can be improved, simplified, and made more transparent. So I guess subtitle here will be, so what did we have? Poisson Lee. So now we will have Poisson Lee group. What I want to do is this. For an obvious reason, I didn't define the space. So let's change the tag completely and banish it from our considerations. Instead, let us consider what intuitively does look like the correct notion of the coordinate ring in this case. Well, I raised all of this. Remember, it's all gone. So d lambda plus u1, u2, it's these fellows, u1, u2, et cetera, that is the coordinates. But they aren't really, because these are series, so you can differentiate them. So the natural object here, of course, is the ring of differential polynomials. So, meaning these variables and all formal derivations of them. This is what oftentimes called the Chet algebra. And of course, all of this is over polynomials in lambda. This is the object to consider. The algebra, let's suppose there is just one of them. What would I mean if I wrote this? I would mean this. And this thing would carry an extra structure, a derivation that sends un to un plus one. That's what I meant. Now there are just many such deals. It's honest polynomials. Lambda is different. Lambda will never be differentiated. Well, so much so that I will even change the notation. I agree that it's not quite the coordinate ring. I'll put a small c upstairs, meaning either Poisson or compound. In any case, just some label to indicate that this is not quite the usual coordinate ring. What I want to say, and this is straightforward, I will not be really explaining it. The point of it, it's where this vertex algebra, so if you read the introduction to the Bayliss and Greenfield book, it's explained there extremely clearly. This is where this theory actually begins. You start with extremely complicated bracket, and then realize that what you really need to encode all of them is a smaller space that carries the structure not so much of a Poisson algebra, rather what they called Poisson, or sometimes what is called a vertex Poisson algebra. So here is, I will start. So what I really am saying is this standard fact that what like 40 years ago was thought of as a Lie bracket, Gelfand-Dicke Lie bracket, nowadays is thought of as a Poisson bracket or a vertex Lie bracket. Is this all right? I don't really have any. So what it really means is that instead of writing what I wrote there, I will write now u1 of z bracket u1 of w equals I should also warn you that I will be often using Bielitz and Drinfeld words, but actual meaning given to those will be a particular case of vertex algebras and such structures. So for people who like Bielitz and Drinfeld language, it means that all those things as D-modules live on C and are translation invariant. And that's an example. I will call it Poisson, although perhaps it will be more appropriate to call it a vertex Poisson algebra. That's just the bracket. How about the group structure? Well, of course, we have a multiplication. And here is one co-multiplication. Well, it gives us a co-multiplication. I should perhaps start all over. More carefully. So this is a Poisson morphism. And still, this is a Poisson algebra, is in particular an algebra, commutative associative algebra. So it has a unit and it has a co-unit. For example, this map is obviously given by simply sending all uj to zero and lambda to zero. It's as easy as it gets. So you may wonder what's the analog of the last. So that's just an old fact that this is a Poisson, is a reinterpretation of the main statement of the Hessian-Zakharievich theorem. These are trifles. This is an interesting fact. So what's the analog of this in that situation? Let me erase it. Well, you can guess. So the analog of this, I will record it here. We no longer quite have, we really have somewhat, it's all parallel, but we switched, we changed the language a little bit. So the analog of this would be what people know, that's quite standard, the W1 plus infinity algebra, except that it's usually people discuss this as a vertex algebra. Now we consider it quasi-classical limit. So it's not a vertex algebra, it's a Poisson algebra. I'll indicate it by simply writing that it's Poisson. So I don't want, there is really no, probably not at this late hour to explain in any detail how this is related to this. I'll just, so this is the Poisson algebra attached in a standard way to this. By the way, this is an associative algebra, but this is an equal, this is a Lie algebra by definition. So it's the corresponding Lie algebra. And this is the Poisson algebra attached in a standard way to a Lie algebra like this. I don't want to spend too much time on that, but I will, so those people who don't know this won't, but those people who do will understand this easily. So this is a Lie algebra, an honest Lie algebra, but it's a Lie algebra of a special type. It's an O module, and the bracket is given by differential operator. So what it means is that this Lie algebra is, so to say, some Lie functor applied to some what Bellinson and Drinfield would call Lie star algebra, or vertex algebra people will call vertex Lie algebra. So this thing then is simply appropriately defined symmetric algebra of this Lie star algebra. Quantization, this is known to be quantized, and then this will be the symmetric algebra functor will be replaced by the universal chiral universal enveloping algebra functor. All right, so this is a refinement of the Hastings-Zakharievich theorem. I haven't told you much. So we know a Poisson Lie group. Here is an example. And this is a reformulation where we consistently replace things like Lie algebras, Poisson algebras with their compound pseudo-tensor category analogs. All right? So the result I wanted to report on today is about, I would like to quantize this. Well, I unjudiciously erased everything. But remember, what is it that we would like to quantize? We have something that looks like a bialgebra. It's a Poisson algebra, so there is a bracket, and there is also a co-multiplication. Quantization of a Poisson algebra is, of course, a vertex algebra. So what we are after is a vertex bialgebra. So V is a vertex bialgebra. If, well, V is a vertex algebra. The category of vertex algebras is naturally a tensor category. A tensor product of vertex algebras is a vertex algebra canonically. So it's a vertex algebra, there is some sort of multiplication, there is a co-multiplication. It's co-associative in the usual sense of the word, and also must be, this is a canonically, as I said, a vertex algebra, so it must be a co-associative vertex algebra morphism. And of course, there are trifles that I don't want to spend too much time on. A vertex algebra canonically contains a unit vacuum. And now we would like there to be a co-unit. And there are obvious axioms that I'll skip. Ah. It doesn't matter. For this definition, it doesn't matter. In all my examples, it will be, you mean by a vertex operator algebra, you mean this, the meaning is that of Lipovsky and his co-author. So it's Z-graded and some. So the only thing that really is important to me is that this be a vertex algebra. But actually, the example I'm working with satisfies all reasonable conditions. It's like a W algebra. Whatever usual W algebra is. Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to comment on. That's the whole point. There is no central charge here. So I wanted to comment on it. So here is a pre-prepared answer to this question. So this is a very simple definition, but it belongs to, how shall we call it, a less popular variety of concepts. But perhaps the best thing I can tell you about it is that it is officially recorded in the Balance and Greenfield treatise. I don't know, at least I don't know of a really interesting example. So why is it that it's not particularly popular? The reason is obvious. Why do people need a bialgebra structure to give the tensor category structure on modules? Vertex algebras are famous for a non-trivial definition of such tensor structure, and this is quite different. So the answer to your question is that at no point almost there will be a central charge. All my vertex are probably, this is something that actually answers your question. It's not quite a VOA, it's a VOA typically over a ring. And so, for example, central charge, if you consider G hat, central charge K will be a variable, just like lambda. That really is what this story is all about. So it's a staple of this discussion. Just all these algebras will be over some coordinates, over some rings. Yep.
May also hope that there's like a zero-trivial matrix.
This is something that one would like. Is this a question or a statement?
For this example, I don't hope there is. You know that.
I also hope, but this is something where I'm headed. But let me state the result. I will be able to tell you a little more about it, but not much more. So, just as I said, so if there is a message, is that perhaps, so typically this is a strange thing to do, but remember, the topic of this conference, it's that people are interested now in vertex algebras that are related to associative algebras. In this context, the associative algebras tend to have a co-multiplication. So it is my hope that a vertex bialgebra that I will exhibit for you and this train of thought does make sense, at least in this context. All right, so this is then what I would like to construct, how this is done. So quantization will be obtained by kind of analytic continuation of the known quantization of WGLM. So I will start with W of GLM a la the classic work of Lukyanov, or if you like, via Miura transform. So this is as follows. I'll give myself, we'll start with Heisenberg algebra. It will depend on a parameter. It's generated by, it's a standard Heisenberg generated by n fields. The OP so in some sense, what I'll spend a bit of time talking about will be like an elementary degeneration of what Rabchuk explained yesterday. So delta ij, so this corresponds to a diagonal matrix in the sense that the OP of two such fields is typically zero unless I equals j, and then it is as usual. So from then it's quite standard. I guess for many people here it's very, very familiar. So set up this formal differential operator. Del minus I1 of z dot 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 del minus in of z. Its purpose being formally to expand it and obtain for some fields whose formula those who don't know it will find easy and interesting to record. You will soon see that it will be important for us to study how this depends on n. So I will further complicate the notation by attaching an extra superindex. So the definition if you like definition slash theorem Diota Lukyanov 88 is that Wn of H will be defined to be the subalgebra generated by the indicated fields inside the vertex subalgebra of the Heisenberg. The theorem is that this is a quantization of, in the notation I chose, of the Gelfand-Dicke algebra, which the way I think about it is slightly different. So of the following Poisson algebra, C of DON regarded as a submanifold in G psi DO. It's a classic and well-known result, but I'll probably say a sentence or two about it. So in what sense is it a quantization? It's easy and actually fun to see. So consider what's written here, modulo H. So just quotient, remember this is a parameter, so all of this is over polynomial ring in H, quotient out by H. Then the ambient Heisenberg becomes commutative. And that means that this is a commutative algebra carrying a Poisson, or rather Poisson bracket. What's written there, if you think about it, so it's a classic result that these field modulo H give this. It's what's known as the Miura transform, but it's pleasing to notice that from the current point of view, the fact that at H equals zero, the result is Gelfand-Dicke algebra is simply the statement. So this is equivalent to saying that this multiplication is Poisson, rather Poisson. And that was part of, it's a non-trivial result of Hessian-Zakharievich. Of course, this is, historically it was done quite differently, but from the present point of view, it's very easy to understand. Agreed? But that's what's written here, nothing beyond that. So the content of this theorem really is that the algebra generated by these fields has the right size. So the OPE of any two such fields is expressed as a normally ordered product of these same fields. It's a highly non-trivial result. If I'm allowed to make a personal observation, to my shame, I actually read carefully the paper by Lukyanov very recently, and it was a chastening experience for a mathematician to see what a physicist could do 30 years ago. It's quite remarkable. People who hasn't done it, I strongly advise you to read this paper. It's
sorry, so this product, this power n is this tensor product?
No. It's just the product of differential operators. Okay. It's geometry. It's the map of manifolds. They all carry.
It's just this, the Miura transform. Okay.
It's just this, exactly. All right. What I would do now, and that really is the heart of, that's the construction. So we would like to extend this analytically, as I said, with respect to n. So what I will do formally is as follows. I will give the collection of these. I don't know where to start. A direct system structure. Namely, I will define for any, so for any n less than or equal to n, I'll define a map of vector spaces. I almost erased it. So this formula is a nice prerequisite. It's not particularly, the map is not particularly imaginative. It sends UI to UI. A lemma that, given this non-trivial result, a lemma that is not at all hard to prove is that the OPE of any two such fields is depends on lots of things, but it's I'll denote it in this way. So is a polynomial in n if n is large enough, so it stabilizes. What it means is that you can replace n with a complex number. So this implies that the direct limit carries a two-parameter vertex algebra structure. Now, I have something specific to say about it, and I will. Denote this. I'll call it L. Honoring Lukyanov of nu and h, and nu is n replaced. So this is a.
I'm asking the same question. We'll just ask: is it the same as that one plus infinity? Does that have infinity? Or
I'll comment on it. Probably you will tell me something too. So this is a vertex c nu h. A nu is n.
A nu.
So let me, David, let me state the theorem, and then I'll comment on it, and you will see what you or other people tell me then. So this is my object, the main object. Let me now record. What structure it carries. So to begin with, it's there is a if you pick any two integers n and m, then there arises a vertex algebra morphism like this. The construction is obvious. Remember where this comes from. From the product of those linear factors. If it's n plus m, then first n and the last m. This is it. So this part gives you a representative there, and this part gives you representative there. What that easily implies, if you see, if you look at the formulas, you'll immediately realize that this gives a vertex algebra co-multiplication. Well, of course, there is a unit as being.
Before you erase, the map over there goes from the smaller n to the bigger m?
Yes.
So smaller to bigger. So it's a.
Co-unit. We need a map from this to C. Remember, if you look at the definition, it's just an inductive system of polynomial rings. So it really is identified with polynomials in those. I'll raise n because I'm in the limit now. Now there is new and h also polynomial variables, and that has a standard augmentation map, and this is it. It looks quite this part of the construction is natural, but of course this is not this. Nevertheless, it's and it is a part of the theorem that I'm about to state is that this is also a vertex algebra morphine. To give you intuition, it's like you take a V of G hat. Of course, it doesn't map naturally onto C, but it depends on the central charge. If you mod it out, then there is a co-dimension one submodule. And this is exactly what happens here. If you mod out everything, then there is a co-dimension one submodule, and that will be vertex algebra morphine. But in any case, here is the main result, which you can easily predict. So L nu H is a vertex by algebra. So I guess maybe formal. So this is delta, and this is, say, epsilon. Is a vertex by algebra modulo H. No, modulo nu, of course. No, H. Sorry. Modulo H. It recovers, of course, what we started with. So it is indeed a quantization. And finally, so the what we really want is that if nu is an integer, then there is an ideal. And that indeed is true. So there is a map, there is a surjection. Where nu is mapped to n, and n should be at least 3, I think, for all of this to be correct. And finally, well, remember I've been insisting all along that we consider linearization. It is also, it also survives. I'll record it up there. So 4 in the limit h tends to infinity, L nu h degenerates now into the honest quantum W1 plus infinity. You will notice that this funny thing that if h goes to zero, we do get, but quasi-classical such thing. At infinity, we also get it, but quantum. That's a vertex algebra.
WN is also a subalgebra of the Bernoulli, also a quotient of the
Bernoulli. No, it's not a quotient, it's the same size. W1 plus infinity is also generated by...
No, I'm saying WN is also a quotient of W1 plus infinity, right?
I guess this one, the standard one, only for special values of the parameter, something like this, as far as I know. It's cats and some people. It's when C is n, then W, well, it has a central charge. If the central charge is n, then it projects onto Wn and perhaps irreducible Wn or something like this. And here, the central charge, there is an explicit formula, I simply don't remember it, depends on h, so it's generic.
Isn't the central charge related to nu? So you put nu to n instead?
Central charge is probably related to both of them. I have the formula, but probably it's too late to...
I thought it was related to nu. So this projection corresponded to that projection.
So let's discuss it. So this is the main result. So perhaps the result as stated is nu. Otherwise, there is absolutely no claim to originality here. However, so what really I mean by that? Well, of course, over the years, there is a number of physics papers then where the two-parameter W1 plus infinity algebra is discussed. This is not, I guess, at least I should name Prochaska. This is not to say that I was able to find a definition of the algebra there. But more importantly, the attitude, the tone seems to be that there is the W1 plus infinity algebra. This doesn't seem to be the case. So it's one of the purposes of my talk. I probably won't really have time for that. This theorem, at least part of it, is proved as an interplay of two such W1 plus infinity. One is this one, and another is better established and carries the name of Andy Lin-Sha. Well, he has W infinity, something that in this way, in a similar way, recreates W of SLn. But of course, you can simply multiply by the Heisenberg. And that's what, oh, by the way, well, shame on me. This is a joint work with, I apologize, with Andy. So these two algebras are not quite isomorphic. You will notice that both are, both are algebras over polynomial rings. And there is a map between them. So they are isomorphic, so to say, generically. To get an actual map in this direction or in that, you need to tensor, if you go like this, you need to tensor with sort of Galois extensions. And likewise there. This algebra, there is a more fundamental distinction between them in that this algebra has a very natural co-multiplication. This doesn't. Of course, if you identify, then you can carry over one structure to another, but you pay a price. You can define co-multiplication, but remember, you need to do an extra localization, and this way you will kill, as far as I understand, you will kill the co-unit. Co-unit is a subtlety there. Co-unit means the existence of the co-dimension one ideal. When you localize, you kill any possibility of having a co-dimension one ideal. So I'm almost done. So one last sentence. So in the may have two. Well, here is one. Penultimate statement. So this is used in, so of these, so one, all of this is set up, this is all mostly easy. The least trivial is the statement that's the easiest to anticipate, this projection. So it's like discussing when Verma modules are reducible. This task, at least partially, was accomplished by Andy for this algebra. And he knows for which lambda and c this algebra maps onto the usual W. You translate, for him, it's some complicated polynomial. Upon translation, this becomes as nu goes to n. That's one remark, and perhaps the very last one. So I wanted to finish this talk not so much with a bang as with a question mark. So is something like, maybe this is what Kevin meant, is a vertex Young-Yen. So it does, perhaps one can even define R matrix there, vertex R matrix, whatever that means, but it definitely has this flavor. So one last formula. So give yourself an arbitrary number of integers. Then what I told you means that this algebra maps onto the tensor product of the usual WNs. This is exactly a sort of a behavior that you expect of a Young-Yen. This is like a product of evaluation map. So you can think of this as approximating this whole thing. So perhaps there is something behind that, but I don't know what else to add, and I will stop here. Thank you very much. You mean WG and WG hat, WG check? Is this?
We're doing GLN here, right? So WN has there is a manipulation of the parameter WN which maps it back to itself.
The answer is I don't know. I never really thought. But for them, they really have a parameter. They have central charge, and here it's a parameter. So the answer is I don't know. So maybe it can. What actually do you mean? So they are isomorphic. So one W is isomorphic to another if you change with central charge to something else.
Right.
So formally, you can write this formula. And, good question. I don't know.
Actually, H bar to 1 over H bar, very roughly, but not far.
Yeah. Well, something like this. So I don't know, but it's an excellent question. I'll think about it. If something's to tell you, I'll tell. Yep.
Hey. In the default case, we have a two-parameter deformation of W1 plus infinity, and it's also a bi-algebra. So it has a co-product that you can explicitly write down. Can you compare it with L? I mean, I think the deformation is more related with what you call W.
Is this what you were talking about?
Yeah.
But that's a quantum algebra. It's not a vertex algebra.
Sure, I certainly understand that, but the question is if there's a relation between that co-product and this one.
I have no. This algebra, the common belief that any algebra like this, you know, if you have a vertex algebra, you can create some sort of an associative envelope.
Yeah.
This algebra is supposedly creates the Young-Yen of GL1.
Okay. Yeah, it's
a fine Young-Yen.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Not that I can verify this. I've seen some crazy formulas that claim something like this, but yeah, I guess it's a common belief. It's probably true for any such algebra. But I don't know.
I was a bit taken aback is that in the deform case, the construction we have is the fact that the W1 plus infinity is an inverse limit. You get homomorphisms from the bigger Ws to the smaller ones. But over here, you have a direct limit. So I don't know what an analog of that is the deform picture.
Maybe you're talking about an associative algebra.
Yeah, no, I.
But then it's natural. Associative algebra is a topological algebra. So
yeah.
When you go from any vertex algebra to an associative algebra, you need you know what I'm talking about. Associated to any vertex algebra is a Lie algebra of. Lie algebra of Fourier coefficients. It's not an associative algebra, but it. if you, there is a way to embed it canonically into some associative algebra, where, well, you know what I mean. So once you go over to associative algebras, you need infinite sums, and then perhaps you will have to do something even at this level, allowing infinitely many fields. But this is that becomes murky. I don't know.
It is a bit different actually, but I'll ask you afterwards. So,
oh. I guess we all have a debt of gratitude. I suggest that we all give a round of applause to the organizers for this gift of a conference.